Being the 14th Sunday after Trinity, today is also St. Matthew's Day. And the lectionary is the Church of England table of Bible readings that tells us all sorts of exciting stuff like that. And in the lectionary this year, it's been year A from Advent November, December, right through to Advent this year. And the focus in year A has been on St. Matthew's Gospel. So you might have noticed there have been lots of readings from Matthew's Gospel. And on the CCS course in Christian Studies, there's still four places on it, and it's starting next Wednesday. So if any of you would like to consider that, do come and have a word with me afterwards. But excellent course. On that course, one of the recommended books is Richard Burridge's book, Four Gospels, One Jesus. And in this book, he explains the difference between the Gospels, the personality and style and character of the four Gospels. And he uses the traditional symbol images of the Gospel writers, the man, the lion, the ox, and the eagle. Now, you might ask, where do those come from? They're actually found in Revelation chapter 4. But from the early centuries of the church, people thought of them as the four gospel writers. Matthew's symbol is the man. Mark's symbol is the lion. Luke's symbol is the ox. And John's symbol is the eagle. And it's quite a helpful way of remembering the characteristics of the different Gospels. The eagle, as you can imagine, flies high over the world. And John's Gospel, in a similar way, John's Gospel is far-seeing. It's as if John is looking down on the world from God's perspective, all-seeing, all-knowing. The ox, on the other hand, is much more earthbound, isn't he? The bearer of burdens. And in Luke's Gospel, Jesus is much more sort of like a patient beast of burden, caring for all, especially the outcasts in society, right up to and including Jesus' sacrificial death. Of course, oxen were one of the animals they sacrificed in the temple. The lion, Mark's symbol, the lion is full of strength and energy, bounding on stage, rushing around energetically, roaring enigmatically, but at the end dying terribly alone. You can see how the sort of characteristics of the animals link with the characteristics of the Gospels and their writers. And then Matthew is the human face of the true teacher of Israel. Matthew's Gospel features four or five long sermons from Jesus. It features Jesus being rejected. Matthew sort of emphasizes that. And it features Jesus forming from Israel a new community of faith. But of course, the Jesus in Matthew's Gospel it's the same Jesus. It's not a different person. The four Gospels are different aspects, different ways of looking at the one Jesus of Nazareth. A little bit like, for example, reading about the same event in four different newspapers. I don't know, maybe you've done that. Maybe you've got a favourite newspaper and perhaps one day you bought a different one and you thought, oh, this is a different way to look at things. In one paper, you might get more details. In another one, you might get some quotes from bystanders and passers-by. In a third one, you might get a lot of comment, perhaps cynical comments from the writers, the journalists, and so on. Now, of course, we don't doubt it happened. It's still the same event. It's just different angles, different perspectives on the same event. Richard Burridge, in his book, uses a different analogy of four portraits of Winston Churchill. He talks about going to Chartwell, Churchill's house in Kent, and seeing a portrait of Churchill, top left, as a statesman, talking with Roosevelt, planning their strategy in the war. Or then on the top right there is a family tea party at Chartwell with all his relations gathered round the table. Or bottom left there, Churchill visiting the troops on the battlefield. Churchill in uniform with a guitar clamp. A cigar. How would you clamp a guitar between your teeth? No, don't do that. Churchill didn't play the guitar, as far as I know. But he always had a cigar, didn't he? Big, fat cigar clamped between his teeth. And then on the right, bottom right there, Churchill on holiday, the painter painting, as he loved to do. And at Chartwell, of course, there's even his studio with lots of his paintings. Well worth a visit, actually. But Richard Burridge says, no, these are not four different people. This is just four aspects of the same man in different situations and seen from different angles. And of course, as we've heard in our second reading there, Matthew gives us also, he gives us his own personal story. Like the others, Jesus passed by and simply said to Matthew, "Follow me." That picture, by the way, is from a website called The Brick Testament. Bible stories, Bible scenes done in Lego. And it's great, actually. Have a look at it if you like a good picture. Great for children, anyway. But Matthew, of course, is not a fisherman like so many of the other disciples. He's a tax collector. That's what the image is showing. And the tax collectors were despised by the Jews, partly because they were collaborators with the Romans, the oppressors of the Jewish people, and partly also because they were thought to be corrupt. Tax collectors collected more than they should have done and lined their own pockets with the extra. So the Pharisees refer to tax collectors and sinners. They lump them in with the outcasts of society. And this happens six chapters after the other disciples have been called by the lakeside. So Matthew, or Levi, as he's called in Mark and Luke, he's a late arrival on the scene. And he probably was a bit of an outcast amongst the disciples as well. But, like the other disciples, he gets up and he follows Jesus without, it appears, a second thought at all. Apparently, he left everything behind on the table, the taxes he'd collected and so on. How remarkable is that? He got up and he walked out and followed Jesus. And that says to me that Jesus chose people who he sensed were ready to respond, whatever their position in society, whoever they were, whatever their background, whatever they'd done wrong in the past. If they were ready to respond to him, Jesus called them, said, "Follow me." And they got up and went with him. And what's the first thing Matthew did? Well, you heard it in the story, didn't you? He threw a party for all his friends and associates, probably his work colleagues as well, the other tax collectors. He threw a party and said, "Come and meet this Jesus who I've just met. Come and meet him and find out for yourself." New Christians could do that very well, couldn't they? We all could, actually. Throw a party for people to come and get to know Jesus. Why would you do that, Vicar? What's the motive? Well, when Jesus was criticized in our story for eating with the tax collectors and the sinners, he drew that famous analogy. He said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but it's the sick. Imagine, if you would, if you find a new doctor, a remarkably good doctor, someone who really can make his patients better. Why would you not tell people? Why would you not go and tell your friends? Say, "You'll never guess what I've discovered. Come to the surgery. Come and meet this guy. Come and find out what he can do for you." Now, there are some people who are going to say, "No, no, don't need any of that. Perfectly healthy, thank you. Why on earth do you think I should go to the doctor?" But there are others who know that to be honest, if you look hard enough, everybody's got some problem or other, haven't they? Everyone could be a bit healthier. There are others who are going to say, yeah, I'll go and give it a try. I'll go and see how he can help me, what he can do. There are others who will respond. And our job is simply to invite people. Whether they respond or not is between them and God. Jesus actually uses analogies like that a lot, doesn't he? Parables are a kind of analogy. All of them are, aren't they? At one point in Matthew 13, a bit later on, we're told Jesus did not say anything to the crowd without using a parable. Parables are almost unknown before Jesus, but Jesus seemed to use them almost exclusively. Stories that illuminate something about God and his kingdom. Matthew in particular sees Jesus as the true teacher of Israel. That's what the man's face, the human face, that's why that image is Matthew's image. Matthew features four or five major sermon sections. The Sermon on the Mount we know so well, don't we? Blessed are the poor in spirit, and so on. Matthew's Gospel, chapters 5, 6, and 7. Matthew 10, for example, talks about mission and persecution. It's when Jesus sends out the disciples on mission. And when they come back, he talks to them about how the world will persecute them. But they're not to worry. He's overcome the world. And the Holy Spirit will give them the courage and give them the words when they stand before kings and princes. Matthew 13, he talks about the parables of the kingdom, those who are lost, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and so on. Matthew 18, he talks about relationships in the church, how to deal with one another, how to love one another and forgive one another, and so on. We've heard about that in previous weeks, haven't we, about forgiveness and reconciliation and so on. And then Matthew 24 and 25, Jesus talks about the end of the age, what it will be like when he returns and when all sorts of catastrophes happen around. Be ready. And each of those sermon sections, if you like, starts with Jesus calling his disciples to him. They sit at his feet as he teaches them. And it ends with the phrase, Jesus finished these sayings and moved on. It's very remarkable when you look through them. They've got those bookmarks at the beginning and end, if you like. There's lots of other little features of Matthew. He likes mountains a lot. Jesus goes up the mountain a great deal in Matthew. Jesus speaks quite enigmatically, a bit like John's Gospel. You think, oh, what does he mean by that? Let's think about that a little bit. Matthew features the crowds around Jesus a lot. There are the crowds following him around. And it's only in Matthew's Gospel that Jesus speaks about the church on two occasions. The other Gospels don't talk about the church at all. So it's a bit distinctive in those ways. So we are grateful to Matthew, the tax collector, despite him being a tax collector and a sinner and probably a bit of an outcast amongst the disciples. He brings his own aspect, his own view of Jesus in his gospel account. Jesus the man and the true teacher of Israel. If you've never actually sat down and read through a gospel at one sitting, it's actually a very illuminating thing to do. Matthew's gospel's a little bit longer than Mark or John. It'll probably take you 2 to 3 hours, something like that. But just sit down and read it, and you'll notice some of the sort of features of Matthew coming through time and again. When I read a gospel, I love to just make a few little notes. Oh, that's interesting. I've not seen that before. But God will speak to you through it. So why not maybe this afternoon, who knows, read through Matthew's gospel and hear what the tax collector has to say to us today.